Welcome to The Workplace, a podcast by Cal Chamber. I'm Erica Frank, Cal Chamber's General Counsel and Executive Vice President. And today on the podcast, we'll be discussing the most asked questions that our members are asking our labor law helpline as employers and HR professionals are trying to navigate the challenging times that are upon us due to the coronavirus. Joining me on the podcast today are Cal Chamber's employment law subject matter experts, Bianca Saad and Matt Roberts. And all of us are practicing our social distancing and all recording from different locations. So here we go with the remote podcast, which I think is fantastic that we can still bring this information to you. We have been receiving an onslaught of calls at the Cal Chamber Labor Law Helpline from many of you who are trying to make sense of the current state of affairs with the coronavirus. There has been quite a bit of information that has been thrown out to all of us, particularly in the last week. We've had a number of shelter-in-place ordinances issued throughout the state of California. The governor also issued a shelter-in-place order. And with all of this is uncertainty, but also how do we keep our business operating? Do our employees come into the office? Do they not? How do we protect the health and safety of our employees and our customers through this difficult time? So we've compiled a list of the common questions that we've been receiving over the last, I'd say maybe 7 days. Things have really ramped up over the last couple of days. So we're going to go through those, Matt, Bianca, and myself, addressing each one and trying to provide a little bit of insight for all of you so that you can all listen and hopefully have more information to use. Also identifying resources like we've done in the past. Our agencies continue to put forth FAQs. Sometimes they're updated. So we are really trying to ease the burden on all of our members and businesses throughout the state of California and trying to provide the most information that we can. All right, Matt and Bianca, let's get rolling. So Matt, common question we've been receiving, and it's not one that we like to hear, but what's the difference between a layoff and a furlough?
Yeah, good morning, Erica. Thanks for having me. This has probably been the most common question that we've seen on the helpline. So common that I published a blog post up on the California Chamber website, which is a good point for our members to take a look at. We have a extensive landing page for resources on the COVID-19 crisis as it evolves. So go take a look at the Cal Chamber webpage. My blog article is up on that webpage as well. But furlough and layoff are terms that we haven't really heard since the Great Recession about a decade ago, especially the term furlough. Furlough is something that was brought back during Governor Schwarzenegger's administration when he would furlough the state employees, essentially reducing their hours. What employers are trying to do here in this instance with layoffs and furloughs is they're trying to keep the employees, not let them go. But certain economic conditions or certain shelter-in-place orders are requiring them to shut down their businesses and reduce their hours to zero. What the employers need to understand, however, is that there's certain labor commissioner rules that have been in place for a long time that where we reduce an employee's hours down to zero and don't reinstate them and reschedule them within the same pay period, our final pay rules under Labor Code Section 201 can kick in under those circumstances.
And so what is exactly then the difference between a furlough and a layoff?
Under these circumstances, it's hard to see any real practical difference. If we are able to bring our employees back within the pay period in which we furloughed them, then there's nothing really to worry about here, and we can really call it a furlough. But otherwise, if our employees are having their hours reduced down to zero and not being returned within that same pay period, currently, the law is treating that as a layoff, which implicates a number of different things. For example, the final pay, as we talked about, there's also some issues with benefits in which we may now have a COBRA triggering event if they don't work enough hours over the course of these shutdowns and these furloughs. So it's going to be important for employers to see what's going on with their workforce and when they're going to return the employees to work. And if it's indeterminate, a furlough and a layoff are probably going to look about the same.
And so one of the things too by definition, the term layoff is there's no job, to come back to. And I know in, unfortunately, in some of the circumstances, many businesses are facing that they're looking at the economic impact being closed for 2 weeks or not having customers coming to, let's say, a restaurant to eat, that they know that when this is over, there will be definitely a reduction in force until things get better. So with that layoff, you mentioned there's a couple of things that employers need to remember. A layoff is just like a termination that does trigger that final paycheck, which includes any accrued time that needs to be paid out. It does trigger notices as well. We do have a list of those on our Cal Chamber website. So there is a lot of documentation and paperwork that employers do need to make sure that they complete when they're laying these employees off. Is that correct?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And kind of a tangential question here, one that follows up on the layoff and furlough is, depending on which one I choose as an employer, is that affecting my employees' unemployment insurance benefits that they may be entitled to? Which is important to see because the employers out there are really trying to save their employees and help them out through this kind of unknown crisis. And what the EDD is saying is if these employees are losing hours, whether they're furloughed or whether they're laid off, that they should still apply for unemployment insurance benefits because of these reasons that we have, which is the slowdown because of the COVID-19 or the shelter in place orders. So be on the lookout for EDD correspondence as well and respond timely as there are going to be a number of claims going forward.
That's really important to mention. The EDD has waived the 7-day waiting period that's normally in effect when a individual has lost their job for no cause of their own. The 7-day waiting period has been waived. With that being said, the EDD has experienced, as everyone can imagine, a significant increase in unemployment insurance claims. So there is going to inevitably be a delay in when the money is actually in that employee's hands. Again, lots of helpful information available on the EDD website. We included a link to the relevant portion of the EDD website on Cal Chamber's resources page. Thanks, Matt, for that. Bianca, since we started hearing about the coronavirus, probably in the last month or so now, we started to get an increase in questions about whether an employer can take an employee's temperature before that employee begins work or enters into the workplace. Tell us a little bit about how the answer to that question has actually evolved, quite honestly, in the last week or so.
Yeah, it's a great question and definitely one that we did start seeing early on, I would say, late February. And yeah, the answer has changed. So for a little background, for example, so the EEOC has a document that was initially published back in 2009. During the H1N1 virus, as far as pandemic preparedness in the workplace and how that coincides with the Americans with Disabilities Act or the ADA. And so one of the questions addressed, of course, was whether or not employees could take an employee's temperature. Now, generally speaking, we know that that answer is no. It is considered a medical exam that would only be done in the very most of limited circumstances. Now, that being said, within the last week or so, the EEOC's guidance actually has been updated to address COVID-19 specifically, and acknowledging the fact that the CDC is now recognizing community spread of COVID-19, and because of the precautions that are being taken, as of March 2020, employers may take an employee's temperature. Now, keeping in mind that's going to be subject to ADA confidentiality requirements. Alongside that, we also have the California's Department of Fair Employment and Housing, or the DFEH. They've addressed their own guidance through an FAQ document, also taking the same position. Now, the DFEH does emphasize, again, that this is for the limited purpose of evaluating the risk that the employee's presence poses to others in the workplace. And again, that's specifically as a result of COVID-19.
Fantastic. So from a practical perspective, Are there some precautionary, just from talking through this with employers taking the temperature, there's certainly going to be some hygiene issues to the extent that the employers need to be really careful when they're doing this. And I would imagine utilizing the thermometers that are gauging the heat of someone's forehead.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's going to be the best way, again, because you, like you said, the hygiene considerations, and not just that too, but the social distancing, right? The distance of that we're all trying to keep with each other. So practically speaking, there are still some challenges and considerations that have to be looked at as far as how you're going to implement the practice.
Okay. Thank you. And we'll get back to some of those questions related to employees coming in and potentially being exposed in a moment. Matt, let's go back to discussion with the shelter in place ordinances. We saw the local communities, it was almost like the domino effect last week. It felt like every day there was a new locality implementing a shelter in place order. Many of which had different requirements. We became very familiar with the term essential business, and that became a very important term because if a business was deemed essential, then it could remain open and employees could report to work. So we did get, and we still continue to get, a lot of confusion about shelter-in-place orders and whether a business is essential. How can we help businesses determine whether they're essential and what that means?
Yeah, that's a really complicated question, Erica, as you mentioned, because we had both the county shelter-in-place orders that came down early last week, and then at the end of last week, because of that domino effect you mentioned, Governor Newsom issued the statewide order. Again, the Cal Chamber resources page has links to the governor's order. We have a blog post that's discussing it, as well as a link to the public health officer's list of essential businesses. Now, keep in mind, the list is very lengthy and technical. I highly encourage businesses who can't seem to differentiate whether they are explicitly or not an essential business to contact their legal counsel to help work through that process, because it implicates a lot of legal issues, right? If you're not an essential business, you're not supposed to be open, and that's subject to either statewide or county enforcement. We get the question as to which order should I follow, county or state? That's kind of an open question, and one where if there is some inconsistencies between the state's essential business list and your county's essential business list, again, contact your legal counsel to help kind of walk through that. But to start the process, take a look at the resources we have on the Cal Chamber page. We've discussed it at length over the weekend as we've been able to digest the order and as the government has issued more information for us to help guide us.
Thank you very much. Here's another question. We recently learned an employee tested positive for COVID-19. Are we required to notify all of our employees? Matt, why don't you take this one again?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, one I continue to get more frequently as we get farther into the health crisis. And that's a difficult question. If you learn that an employee is tested positive for COVID-19, what both the California Department of Public Health and your local county health agencies have said is you need to contact them immediately, right? Because they're going to give you those next steps as to what you need to do, as well as informing the government as to what's gone on with this diagnosis, that if they need to, they can do contact tracing and the like. What employers follow up with then very frequently is, well, once I contact the health agency, what should I do with the rest of my employees? And the DFEH has some information on this. We have to be careful about employee privacy still in this context. So we're not divulging names and diagnoses, of course. The DFEH has a nice recommendation on there. If you need to inform employees of potential exposure to COVID, which is essentially a general statement to the employees that an employee, without using their name, has tested positive for the disease, you may have some exposure to the disease, and you should contact your healthcare provider for next steps. And so we have to be careful with medical information and maintaining privacy during this time as well.
So I like what you had mentioned as far as not mentioning the employee's name. It's still very critical that we maintain the privacy of the particular individual that may have tested positive for the virus.
Yes, exactly. A lot of the rules that we have in place before the crisis are still in place now, which to give some solace to our HR professionals and our businesses who have worked in California for a long time because we're familiar with them. And while some things are changing drastically, which we're updating up on the website as it happens, a lot of these rules are still in place, such as protecting employee privacy.
Yeah. Okay. I can understand that being a big deal here, as well as informing other employees of the potential exposure. And I can imagine that will create quite a bit of anxiety among employees as well, and perhaps a fear. So what can employers do to kind of calm the fear in addition to encouraging them to talk to their primary care?
Yeah, this circles back around to going to their public health agencies, because they have the resources and the information to guide employers through this process and to help with communicating with employees as well as far as what they should do. And so if you learn of a diagnosis within your workforce, that's why that's that number one most important step, is contact your county health agency to get that process rolling, because they'll tell you what your next steps are.
Great. Fantastic. Great information for everybody. Another phenomena that California employers and employees alike are dealing with is the fact that children are no longer in school. All of the school districts throughout the state of California have closed down, meaning that children who are normally in school all day are now at home, abiding by shelter in place requirements as well. Some may have some work to do that their teachers have been working hard to provide to them, and others do not. Of course, this is a huge issue because somebody needs to be home with the children. So a common question that we've been receiving does relate to employees who have children that are no longer in school because of mandated school closures. Bianca, with regards to these employees that have children who are home because their kids are home, does an employer have to pay these employees who are not working?
Yeah, that's a great question. Definitely one that we've been getting a lot in light of the school closures. And there are different things to take a look at. So, for example, we know that California has school activities leave that includes school-related emergencies. Now, this is going to apply to employers with 25 or more employees working at the same location, and it provides 40 hours total per year. So, under normal circumstances, an employee would be limited to, for example, 8 hours a month. That limitation wouldn't apply in an emergency situation such as this. So we could see a situation where an employee would use all of their 40 hours for the current school closures. Now, under this, an employer can require that the employee use their existing vacation, PTO, or other personal leave unless it's prohibited by a collective bargaining agreement. And then depending on the employer's policy, it could also be taken unpaid. The school activities leave is something that is also addressed in the Labor Commissioner's FAQs on the issue of COVID-19. In addition to highlighting the school-related emergencies, the Labor Commissioner does state that a parent may choose to use any available paid sick leave to be with their child as preventative care. And then we have, you know, the latest development, of course, on the federal level, which is the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. That includes an emergency paid sick leave provision and an emergency family and medical leave expansion. Now, I won't get too into the weeds on this because we did do a previous blog on it. And the previous podcast episode, we covered it in detail, but that would be an option as well. That is going to be going into effect April 2nd of 2020, and then it will be in effect until December 31st of this year.
There's a lot that goes along with that issue. What about employees who are able to actually work remotely? How does that come into play? Yes, their children at home, but the individuals are still able to work remotely. Is that a possibility for some employers, where they can allow business to continue, provide the resources to their employees who can then work even though the children are simultaneously at home too?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's definitely an option to the extent that employers are able to have that telecommuting remote work option for their employees. It's a great one because, and I should mention with the federal law that just passed having to do with the paid sick leave and family medical leave for these provisions of the school closures, it's limited to those employees that can't work or telework. So definitely in a situation where an employee can telework under these circumstances, that's going to be ideal.
Okay, fantastic. And I know that a lot of employers are moving to a more remote enterprise, if you will, with many individuals now adjusting to a remote work arrangement, which of course presents new challenges, new normals, as we've been talking about. But it's nice to know that there are some circumstances where employees can continue to work and employers can continue to operate businesses from other locations. Speaking of employees being able to work, Matt, when we were talking a little bit ago about these shelter in place orders, we touched just a little bit about, you know, the essential business. We're still getting a lot of questions from employers as far as if a business is considered essential under the state order, can they have their employees report to the workplace? And if so, can we require our employees to wear protective gear, such as masks, goggles, gloves, that sort of thing?
Yes. If you're on the essential business list, you know, we can't have our employees report to work, of course. We'll have to be cognizant of the risks of what's going on and being diligent with our workforce. If they're coming in sick, of course, you know, we address those issues. But if we have them come in, we can require them to use personal protective equipment during the times of a pandemic. However, employers also still need to be aware of disabilities and make reasonable accommodations. For example, if someone has a latex allergy, we need to find a different set of gloves. Or if they're in a wheelchair and we require them to use gowns, we have to find a gown that will fit over the person and with the wheelchair in mind. So yes, you can require it, but we need to make reasonable accommodations where appropriate.
Fantastic. Bianca, let's turn back to more questions surrounding layoffs. California and federal both have what's called the WARN Act that requires a 60-day notice to employees who are being laid off, and it typically only applies to larger employers. A common question that we've been receiving is as it relates to the California WARN Act. What are these laws that employers have to follow? You know, what does trigger a CalWARN notice and a federal WARN, and why in this circumstance don't have to necessarily worry so much about the federal WARN Act, but they do CalWARN Act?
Yeah, great question. So as far as what might trigger a California WARN Act for a covered establishment, that would be, for example, a mass layoff. If you're laying off 50 or more employees within a 30-day period, a relocation, or a termination on a mass scale. So the 60-day notice requirement, you know, as we saw these shelter-in-place orders and now the under the localities and then now on the state level, you know, employers are put in this position where they need to make these business decisions and they need to do it quickly. So recognizing that dilemma as far as, you know, being unable to comply with that 60-day notice requirement, Governor Newsom did issue an executive order that basically suspended the 60-day notice requirement. Didn't suspend all of the requirements, but, you know, recognizing the difficulty in meeting that 60-day notice, it still does require a notice. So employers need to give written notice as basically as soon as practicable, and they still need to provide a brief statement of why there is that reduced notification period. It's limited to business reasons as it pertains to the business circumstances, again, related to the COVID-19 situation. And they also need to include statements regarding the eligibility for unemployment insurance benefits. Now, as a part of the executive order, the Labor and Workforce Development Agency has issued some guidance around this. So that is another resource for employers as far as looking at essentially what are the temporary loosened requirements around this. So it's not that they're completely eliminated or completely suspended. But again, that 60-day requirement is currently on hold while we are in this state of emergency as a result of COVID-19.
Okay, so for employers to know whether or not the CalWARN notice applies to them, this only applies to employers with 100 or more full-time employees who must have been employed for at least 6 months of the 12 months preceding the date of required notice in order to be counted. So we're talking about larger employers, those with more than 100 employees having to follow the WARN requirements. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And again, that's for those that are considered covered establishments, which is, you know, listed as industrial or commercial facility.
Okay. CalChamber did update the HR California resource that has information on the CalWARN as it relates to COVID-19 closures. We also, as Bianca had mentioned, have it on our resource page. Okay, thank you, Bianca. Matt, final pay issues, it is not unusual for us to receive final pay issues on the helpline, right? It's a complicated process, particularly when we're talking about terminating. Of course, it's reared its ugly head during the COVID-19, particularly as it relates to companies who are closing and terminating employees. Can we just give folks a quick rundown of what that final pay issue is?
So, again, part of this goes back to the conversation we had about furlough versus layoff, whether or not, we have to meet that final pay. But let's assume that we get beyond these pay periods and these employees are severed from their employment because we've just had to close our business. And we have some final pay requirements, one of which is the most complicated one at this point, is how do we address giving the final paycheck over? Because remember, under the final pay rules, when we terminate an employee's employment, we have to provide that final paycheck at the time and location that that happens. A lot of our employees are remote right now, and so it's very difficult for us to get those paychecks out under those circumstances, especially while we're practicing social distancing, that we can't really do these terminations or these layoffs in person. The Labor Commissioner is looking into issuing more guidance on these final pay rules, but that's one of the biggest concerns, is how do we address that? I mean, unfortunately, there hasn't been any great clear answer. What we do know is once the employee is had their employment severed under these circumstances, we do need to make sure that we're issuing that final pay to the best of our ability, which includes their vacation or PTO balances, and to do our best. Under the rules, there's of course waiting time penalties for every day that payment is late. So employers may choose just to include that in the check and decide to overnight it, say a 1-day waiting period on top of the check, and then they've complied with the rules, assuming that the check gets there on that time. But these are very difficult questions that are in flux that the Labor Commissioner is looking at, maybe issuing further guidance on.
Yeah, so we know the Labor Commissioner is looking at the furlough issue and the old DLSC manual provision that we talked about earlier today. And we'll see whether we get some more guidance on how to get that final paycheck to the employee. In the meantime, we do need to live with what we have. So to your point, Matt, as far as making sure, doing our best, like you said, to make sure that paycheck gets to them on times, and we need to make sure that paycheck gets to them on that day, to your point of paying out that waiting time penalty, whatever it might be, until they get that final paycheck. What is the waiting time penalty in its totality?
Yeah, so the waiting time penalty is 1 day of wages for every day that the final pay is late, up to 30 days the maximum.
Okay, so helpful information for our employers to have as they're calculating what is due and included in their final paycheck. Let's move to something a little bit more positive, and let's talk about remote employees, which we know that we're remote. There's a lot of other employees that are remote in this day and age or this current state of affairs. Paying exempt and non-exempt employees who are working remotely, there's been a lot of questions regarding that. It's no surprise, because exempt versus non-exempt, paying hourly employees is always a tricky situation and always one that we receive a number of questions on the helpline. But now with remote working, there's a lot of oversight that's lost when we have individuals who are working away from the office. Bianca, can you provide some of our listeners some helpful tips about how to pay our exempt, non-exempt employees and whether remote working changes any pay obligations for employers?
Yeah, this is a great question that comes up quite frequently, especially now in the remote context. So I'll first start off with, basically the fact that an employee, whether exempt or non-exempt, is working remotely isn't going to change our obligations for employers as far as how we're paying the employees. So just as a reminder, for example, with our exempt employees, those are the employees that are getting that minimum required salary, they've met the other qualifications, they fall under some exemption. They do need to be paid if they are performing any work during a week. They need to be getting their full weekly salary. Now, if an exempt employee doesn't perform any work at all during a week, then they would be able to have that weekly salary reduced. When it comes to our non-exempt hourly employees that are working remotely, they need to be paid for all of their hours worked. So the most important thing here with your hourly employees is accurately tracking their time so that you can make sure that they're getting paid for all their hours worked, especially including any overtime hours that might be accrued. You also need to make sure for your hourly employees that they are taking their breaks, their meal and rest breaks. Again, you know, hopefully if you've got a temporary telecommuting policy, for example, that was issued for your hourly employees during this time, reminding them of the policy and ways in which that they can, reminding them. For example, some employers have them, suggest employees set an alarm. There are a lot of easy things that employees can do to remember to take their breaks, because as we know, working remotely, sometimes it can be easy to kind of forget where we are and how much time has passed.
I think that's a really good point, particularly as it relates to the workday, right? Because we still have an 8-hour workday requirement overtime triggering if an employee works over that 8 hours a day. And having all the office equipment and your work at home, you're never really leaving work. And I think that that's one challenge for all of us who are working from home. We can't get away from it. It's there. So encouraging employees who are hourly employees, resisting the urge to check an email or to continue working after their day has ended. What do you think about employers encouraging their employees or in their policy simply having the employee follow their normal workday? So they clock in as they would normally, they take their breaks as they would normally, and they clock out as they would normally.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And it's a really easy way to, again, try to keep the schedule as is so that employees aren't all over the place as far as, how much they're working. And it's also can keep some level of collegiality amongst the coworkers. If everybody's kind of working at the same time as they would be in the office, maybe you have a little, chat room where everybody can check in with each other here or there, or even just over email. The expectations are clear that during these hours, this is when the employees will be working.
That's great information. Well, Matt and Bianca, thank you so much. We have hopefully provided some very good information to our listeners, things that will help them get through the situation that we are in. We will continue at Cal Chamber to service all of our members and businesses through these difficult times, and we'll continue to provide updated podcasts, check our websites. We are updating our coronavirus resource guide, and we are doing our best to keep you all informed with the latest and greatest. So with that, I'm going to say goodbye to Matt and Bianca, and I'm going to thank all of you for joining us on the workplace today. Please comment, share, and subscribe to Cal Chamber's podcast by visiting calchamber.com.